everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Doug.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Halloween continues. This time we it is a musical episode. I was going to say 1974. 1974's The Phantom of Paradise and 1975's Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Phantom of the Paradise.
What did I say?
The Phantom of Paradise.
Fair enough.
Yeah, whereas it's The Paradise is the name of the actual theater.
Rather than the opera.
Yes. Yes, rather than the opera.
Had you seen The Phantom of the Paradise before?
No, I hadn't.
Was it as weird for you as it was for me?
I don't know.
It is a very weird movie.
It is a weird movie. I mean, I would say that Rocky Horror Picture Show is also a very weird movie.
Yes, it's just a famously movie that's also very weird.
Yeah, but that's... I mean, that's only my second time ever seeing it.
What?
Yeah, we watched it together, I think, shortly after we moved in together.
Hang on. Rewind. End podcast. Rocky Horror Picture Show is one of the greatest, like, out there cult classics of all time. I wish I lived in a place where there were more viewings of it, because I think Embassy have done it a couple of times.
I'd say the Roxy would be the place to go.
Yeah.
Around Wellington.
Think like heavily like pre-sold and like you're doing in a like weird group.
No, you can get them because they do screenings of The Room at the Roxy as well. And like I've seen them go up. I just haven't been inclined to book them here. Like whereas when I was younger and I was back in Dublin, I went to several screenings of The Room.
Yeah. It's shocking. It's not shocking to me that you've seen The Room more than you've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show.
No. I will say, I don't know where you need to go to see more of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but I can tell you exactly where you need to go if you want to see The Phantom of the Paradise in the cinema more often. Or more often, you haven't seen it in the cinema once. I believe in Manitoba? Hang on, I'll double check.
Manitoba?
Yeah, Winnipeg. Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Was that where it was filmed?
Nope, they just loved it.
They just loved it so much, they bring it back every year.
They just, yeah, they literally, they made it, like, for its anniversary or something, must have been the 50-year anniversary, is that right, 50?
Yeah, would it be 50?
No, that'd be this year, is it?
Yeah.
I don't remember which anniversary it was, but there was one of the anniversaries for it that they literally created specific convention like or festival just to celebrate Phantom of Paradise in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I don't know why. So they played it so when it released in Winnipeg, they played it continuously in the local cinemas there for like a year and a half.
What? Bananas.
They were like, we fucking love this movie, and it's remains like huge in that one area. I don't know why. I didn't like find a reason why. Oh yeah, it was. Oh sorry. Excuse me. It is for the 50th anniversary, and it hasn't happened yet. So there is going to be a 50th anniversary celebration on the 2nd of November. So anyone who's in Winnipeg, Manitoba, or living nearby, somewhere else in Manitoba perhaps, or like Ontario or Saskatchewan.
Canada, or somewhere near the border.
Or somewhere, I don't know where, I can't think of the northern states of the U.S., I could think of the bordering states in Canada.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Ontario on one side and Saskatchewan on the other. Probably Minnesota, maybe Wisconsin. Are those states that border it to the south? Anyway, if you live in that area and you love Phantom of the Paradise, or you heard about it through this podcast and you decide you love it after this podcast, apparently Paul Williams is going to be there. Some of the other actors, some musicians... They're going to do a Q&A. There's a Facebook. This is great because this came from... This is literally, I assume, some fucking fan in Winnipeg, Manitoba put this in as an IMDb trivia fact, and it's like literally, I'll read it out word for word. There will be a huge 50th anniversary celebration of Phantom of the Paradise in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada on Saturday, November 2nd, 2024. Celebration includes screening of movie. Paul Williams and perhaps some other actors slash musicians will be present for Q&A. Look for Facebook group for more info. Winnipeg loves Phantom. They just put an ad in there. They just straight up put an ad in the IMDb trivia. But you know, I mean, it's living up to it. Apparently, Winnipeg loves Phantom of the Paradise.
Okay.
So if you want to be watching Phantom of the Paradise in cinema, that's where you gotta go.
All right. Other than the horror, the music, and the era. And the craziness, there's not really much that links these movies.
Yeah, I mean, plot-wise, they're not the same, obviously.
No.
But they both are... They both came out around the same time. They both are parodying horror and sci-fi.
Yeah.
I feel like Phantom of the Paradise is more like parodying specific...
Yeah, literally.
Horror things.
Well,
yeah, yeah. No, but there's like... They do Picture Dorian Gray, they do Phantom of the Opera, they do, you know, I'm blanking now, but there's Faust. Like a bunch of, Faust, of course. Yeah, they have like a few that they just like pluck and do, you know, do a little parody of. They also both obviously are playing into, you know, the rise of rock music and musicians becoming big in Hollywood and things like that, and it's interesting. It's also weird, because we like to talk when we do twins. These are twin films. We like to talk when we do twin films about, like, how they came out, whether someone copied someone else, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'd like to work backwards on a timeline for this.
Oh, God.
So, Rocky Horror Picture Show, the movie, came out on the 14th of August, 1975. Phantom of the Paradise came out 31st of October, 1974. So you're like, oh... Phantom Paradise came out first. Rocky Horror Picture Show was actually a stage show before that from 1973. So, the other way around. But actually, Phantom of the Paradise was in fucking production hell because it was supposed to be released in summer of 1972.
Wow.
And they had to change a bunch of things in post-production, a lot of which, from what I gather, was because they... in their parodying of the horrors of the music industry, they basically used the actual logo of a studio that was notorious for treating their musicians badly.
Wow.
Swan Song Studios, guys, who sued them. and that's why, like, even though the guy's name is Swan, and every now and then there's, like, a logo of a swan, for the rest of it, they've, like, it's, like... a dead bird and it's like Death Records or whatever,
yeah.
Is because they had to go through and edit out every single time.
Jeez.
the original logo they had in there. I think they literally put it in as Swan Song Studios. Their original was Swan Song Records, and I think the actual one is Swan Song Studios. And I think they represented like Pink Floyd and stuff.
That's crazy.
But yeah, they did not like it. So there was a lot of production hell while they were... Because I think they played it for them. I think they were, like, getting ahead of themselves to be like, hey, is this going to be a problem? And yes, it was. But I just thought it was funny that, like, it seems like, you know... I don't think either of them were copying each other. I think they're just two people had a similar idea at the same around the same time. Yeah. Because this was, you know, a thing to parody. But it's just funny that they kind of leapfrog over each other timeline-wise.
It's interesting to me because talking of, like, the not copying each other, there is this very, like, there are some themes. And obviously because these are both made in the 70s, there's obviously some themes that sort of crossover. Mm. I think at the, like, we're very modern these days. Everything is very modern.
We're very modern these days.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, none of what happens in Phantom, in Rocky Horror Picture Show is actually that shocking.
Right.
In this day and age.
Yeah.
This concept of, you know, this straight white couple, you know, going to a friend's wedding and then being like, oh my God, they're so lucky. Let's get married as well because we're so in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then experience some sort of like sexual awakening by the hands of a alien. Spoilers. And, you know, coming out of their shell, and it is a very 70s like experience of just like straight white kids experiencing something and being like, holy shit, this is the best thing ever, let's just go crazy on it. Phantom of the Paradise, other than the fact that it's taking a lot away from those main sources, it is very much, yeah, like you said, this like turn of like pop culture from the main like the sort of like the Beach Boys, the Juicy Fruits, that are the main breadwinner of SWAT.
Yeah, they remind me of like Frankie Valli.
Yeah, a little bit. It's very 60s. It's not even
60s. 50s.
It's 60s, pretending to be the 50s to really get in that like nostalgia era of it, where it's trying to continue on, and then, you know, this fantastic music composer who ends up becoming the villain / victim of his own success. It's very strange.
I mean, that is very Phantom of the Opera, yeah, as well, to an extent.
Is sort of trying to like push people to do something a little bit more experimental, a little more out there, a little bit more like cerebral, and a new, more aggressive, like beautiful dystopian sort of ideal of like rebellion and stuff, and none of this nostalgia shit.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Swan, being this heartless piece of shit record producer, is like, cool, I'm gonna fuck this guy, steal his work, and like basically try and like get him ruined so I can just take his entire IP and just like do what I want with it.
Also a bit of Harvey Weinstein in him, I think.
Yeah.
Those like scenes where he's auditioning girls and it's just an orgy.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
And also very 70s.
It's interesting because knowing that this was supposed to be released in 72 means that it would have been filmed in like is it 71 probably?
Yeah, so like right off the edge of the 60s.
Yeah, so it's definitely like just transitioning out of the 60s rather than, whereas Rocky Horror is a bit more into the
70s. Yeah. It's interesting because I think the main difference, the main takeaway from both of these movies and the real juxtaposition, the real polarizing points, is the unknown in the unknown in the Phantom is not sexy, where Tim Curry is incredibly sexy. And that's, I think, the most polarizing part about it. Because, you know, he you know, it's interesting, like, there were, like, just the relationship he has with everybody, other than his, like, so-called staff,
mm-hmm.
his housekeepers, who aren't. It's all a very, like, learning to play an instrument and being a master of it and then moving on to something else, like, instantly, like, having, like, genius level, but ADHD. And that is one of those, the Frankenfurter's biggest downfall is he literally comes along, has sex with whoever he wants to, and then is just like, oh, cool, shiny new thing, and then, like, runs away, and that's, like, what's disturbed his, like, his crew, I guess, being all aliens. The Phantom is, like, very much this opposite. He's, like, keeps the portrait of
Picture Dorian Gray, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's this like he's becoming more and more of a monster, and there's this weird like satanic contract that's also built into the story.
Yeah.
Which
I feel was very pointed at music industry professionals at the time.
It would just everything about it was just bizarre from the beginning to the end. And it's just like fantastically bizarre. Like very enjoyably bizarre. But like not a movie you'd be like inviting your normal, I say normal, but I'm saying like you're not your weird film people over to watch.
Yeah.
Like that is not like a movie you would show to a general audience and be like, hey guys, what do you think in 2024? And be like, what the fuck was that?
I'm not the right person to talk about this because I still think everyone needs to watch Sorry to Bother You.
Yes. I will agree that it is a movie, a film that everyone must enjoy.
But I don't think normal people, as you would describe them, would want to watch Sorry to Bother You. Someone at work brought that up, by the way, the other day. Someone was like, oh, this reminds me of this really cool movie, Sorry to Bother You. I was like, oh, don't even get me started. What a great movie. Yeah, I think you're probably right there. But, I mean, it is... I think both are cult classics. I think that Rocky Horror Picture Show has obviously become a whole other monster.
I think there's a simple reason, which I'll get to when you finish that thought.
What? No, just tell me.
It's the music.
I did think that. The
power of the Rocky Horror Picture Show's soundtrack.
Yep.
Everybody knows Time Warp. Like, even kids who would never have seen that movie will know the Time Warp song. But
this is... Yeah, that's because I did. I knew Time Warp before I'd ever seen Rocky Horror. And it's... I don't think that the music in Phantom of the Paradise is bad. I think it just didn't take off in the same way. Yeah. And it's interesting to me because of who made the music for Phantom of the Paradise, which is Paul Williams, who also played the
Swan,
the record exec. And do you know him?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can tell you the names of some other songs that he's written, probably most famous of which is called Rainbow Connection. Which is Kermit the Kermit the Frog's big song.
Kermit the Song's big frog
from the 1979 Muppet movie. Paul Williams has done a whole load of Muppet songs over the years, and those are memorable. They really stick with you. So I think that he can clearly write songs that would last. Like Rainbow Connection, literally, like I said, was from a 1979 movie, and it's still really well known around the world today. And I guess fans of the Paradise just didn't get that. And I'm trying to analyze it as we were watching it and trying to figure out, you know, are these songs catchy enough that I would listen to them after? But I don't, like, by now it's a couple of days since we watched them. I don't remember them. Whereas I remember a surprising amount of the Rocky Horror songs. Like I'd only seen the movie once before. And then when it came on, I knew like half the words to science fiction double feature. I was like, what's the name of the movie now? Name of the song. I think there's just something about the Rocky Horror songs that really do actually stick with you.
Yeah.
And they're also just in popular culture more.
Yeah.
You know, and musicals stay alive by people knowing the music.
It's sort of, I think that's probably why Cats was, I know you hate Cats, but like, not that animals, the stage play.
It's because it doesn't have a plot. It's just...
Neither do Cats.
It does have a plot, but the plot is a bunch of cats are trying to sing their way into heaven.
Yeah.
And that plot's also not even explained in the play. You just gotta know that externally, I guess. It's stupid.
But I think it's because of the music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I've never seen Phantom of the Opera in like, actual on stage. Mm-hmm. I know the music from it.
Well, can
like,
I...
Like, if you played one of the songs, I'd be like, oh, that's Phantom of the Opera. Like,
can I tell you some trivia?
About what?
Can I tell you something?
That's literally half your job. The other half of your job is producing it, and I'm not talking to myself. And I love you.
I'm trying to find it here. So this is third-hand information. So I say take this with a grain of salt, right? Because it was one of the actors in Phantom of the Paradise told this to another actor, and that actor has said, hey, I was told this. The director screened Phantom of the Paradise for Andrew Lloyd Webber and suggested, because they had collaborated before on the original London production of Jesus Christ Superstar, proposed that they adapt Phantom of the Paradise for stage, and Andrew Lloyd Webber decided not to do it, and then shortly afterwards decided to adapt Phantom of the Opera into a musical. And I love the idea that without Phantom of the Paradise, we might not have Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because obviously before then, you know, it was a silent film, and it was, I think it was a play or things like that, but it wasn't, the musical didn't exist. So it's funny that you're like, I know all the songs from Phantom of the Opera.
I don't know some of them. Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a few that if you heard them, you'd be like, oh, I know exactly what that's from. So I just think it's funny that could have been Phantom of the Paradise, you know.
It's really weird.
Mm.
In kind of a good way, but in like a what the fuck is happening on screen kind of way.
Yeah.
It's really worth watching. Oh, and yeah. I don't say that a lot about the movie that I would deem worse in the tone.
Yeah.
Because it's not worse, it's just different in a way where it's sort of like eating something from a culture you don't know very well and being like, I'm going to expose myself to something to grow internally and I might hate it.
Yeah.
Or I might be like, hey, have you been to this place? It's really cool, you know, that guy. There are some scenes in it. The iconography of the movie, the weirdness, it all sort of works together, but it is sort of like, you know, you watching a train crash is a wrong analogy. It's like watching a blender in reverse.
Can I say something else that I think weirdly made Rocky Horror more successful? I think Phantom of the Paradise had costume designers who knew what they were doing. And I think Rocky Horror Picture Show had a costume designer who herself has admitted she had never watched any sci-fi and didn't bother to look at sci-fi for reference for what people would wear in a sci-fi and just created some fucking weird-ass costumes. and the, like, weird dichotomy of the costumes in that movie work somehow in a way that, like, they haven't aged because they don't they're not from an actual era. Yeah. Like, even though, you know, sci-fi is often like a futuristic or whatever, or, you know, alternate something. Phantom of the Paradise was very much like costume of the era.
Yeah.
And then like his like mask and things like that, you know, very Phantom of the Opera. Whereas Rocky Horror just like is the costuming is timeless. Because it literally isn't from any time.
Yeah.
It's just insane costuming.
It really is. And that's the Phantom's outfit. Like, obviously, spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
How he ends up like that, it's, you know, it's Phantom of the Opera. It's...
there's a little bit of Frankenstein in there, yeah, I think, as well. Yeah,
like this. So he goes to prison. The warden is obsessed with ripping people's teeth out, so he gets metal teeth.
Yeah.
Then he escapes from prison, has half his face melted by a vinyl press. That's not even how vinyl presses work. falls onto a river, and then comes back and, like, steals costuming, very Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
But picks, like... science fiction heavy metal bird demon.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like Plague Doctor, but like a weird sci-fi version of it. Yeah.
And then on top of that, he goes full Darth Vader with the fact that he needs like
a voice box.
A voice box.
Yeah.
And the weird contract and blood thing and the fact that he's just being constantly fled drugs and kept locked in a room.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also clearly taken directly from, like, Elvis Presley and, yeah, you know, other musicians.
But he's also now superhuman. It's all very weird, but in a good way.
Yeah. It's, I mean, here's the thing about it. It's making commentary that is still relevant.
Yeah.
Sadly, you know, there are people in that industry, and like I mentioned, the film industry, who do abuse their artists like that. And it's clearly taking some very direct references there. Like, I thought that they almost were, like, hitting, like, hammering it in too much.
Yeah.
When he was giving him the, like, cocktail of drugs to take and to keep, you know, it's like, okay, this is literally, like, I've heard about this for, like, I mean, Michael Jackson was another one, but obviously long after this happened. You know, it's weird to see it just spelled out as people were clearly very aware that it was happening in the early 70s, and that it's to some extent, and maybe not to the same extent, but it's to some extent still happening today.
It's the other characters, like, Swan is this guy who can't be photographed. It's like in the agreement with the media, so no one knows who he looks like, and that's like his whole, like, shtick.
Mm.
Obviously, I mentioned the Juicy Fruits earlier, which are, like, these very, like, you know, I don't even know what the term is from that era, but think, like, harmless, like your grandmother would have listened to it kind of era.
Again, like I said, Frankie Valli.
Non-threatening, yeah.
Yeah.
Happy Days Without the Fonz. And then he's, like, changing it, and it's, like, this whole concept of, like, you know, the weird sex audition. And then the girl who, Winslow, who becomes the Phantom, his obsession with her, and he's, like, rewriting the entire thing. And then Swan's taking that creativeness and is moving it to this new entity he's created, who's, a rock god, like, that real, not quite hair metal era, like, the power metal era, but sort of, like, the real, like, make the girls scream, make the parents not want them to listen to it, you know, that Satan music, like that sort of era of, like, electric guitar and lighting and, you know, stage presence, that sort of era. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, like, Peggy Sue Got Married, like, how, like, they're so harmless, they're, like, you know, archipelago sort of, not archipelago, that's a bunch of islands. what's the term, please? Thank you. I've broken Lisa. A cappella.
It's two words. A cappella. Archipelago.
Yeah. Some Gallipolis there. Gallipolis. What's wrong with it? Galapagos.
Are you okay?
I've lost my train of thought. Hang on, I'm derailing the train. And yeah, the beef character who's taken the music and is, like, going to be reforming it, and of course it's very, you know, he's the lead after the Phantom's been taken off, but the Phantom's not the lead, who was then mangled. It's the other way around. And how he dies is hilarious to me. And the fact that it's just like, oh, the show goes on.
They, by the way,
really electrocuted that guy?
No. The guy from Swan Records or whatever the real studio's name was that they showed the movie to get the sign off on them using the Swan logo, who then didn't let them use the Swan logo, broke down in tears at that part because he had managed a band where the front man had actually been electrocuted to death on stage.
Oh, wow.
And then they were like, we're not going to take that part out. Which is really shitty, actually.
Yeah.
So that was lifted from real life, unfortunately. Well, but I don't think in the real instance, it was a guy backstage doing it on purpose.
It was a giant neon lightning bolt.
No. Did you think Beef was like the equivalent of Rocky? I mean, obviously not like exact equivalent. He's not like man-made and he's not, you know.
Well, you say he's whatever. Not man-made, but that's like the whole
shtick. Yeah, so he is...
Like his...
It's like he's like the puppet.
Yeah, because it's this concept of Juicy Fruit to like push to the side and then his reveal is like out of a coffin.
Mm.
But like, on the runway of an airport? Next to private planes, which I guess is just like, how do we add money into the filming?
Yeah.
Like, how does it look real and expensive?
I think, yeah, it was very much that, like, he's definitely, like, the guy that, first of all, he's kind of, like, the favorite, so it's, you know, Rocky versus Eddie, but he's also, like, the guy that Swan is going to mold into what he wants him to be, and who isn't going to, like, fight back about it and will just do what he's told, and, you know, and it from those kind of points of views, I felt like he was an equivalent to Rocky. I felt like they were a similar character type, even though they're obviously not quite, you know, he wasn't just born.
One of the differences that, talking of Beef and the Phantom, there's a lot of physical comedy that isn't in Rocky Horror Picture Show. There's, I would say, a lot more violence and implied violence in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Like a guy getting his face melted in a vinyl press?
Well, I'm saying about the fact... Spoilers. For those who don't remember, Meatloaf's brain was cut in half.
Right.
And half of it was put into Rocky, and the other half was, I guess, left in his body.
Yeah.
I can't remember, Little Hill? What's her bloody name? I don't actually think it's her actual name. I can't remember the actual cast member's name.
For which, who?
Little Neil, Columbia.
Oh, right, okay.
She's in love with both of them, but was, like, originally in love with...
What do you mean, who's Little Neil?
Columbia.
What? But where's Little Neil coming from?
That's the actor's name.
Her name is Nell Campbell.
Why is it under Little Nell? Oh, it's Nell, not Neil. No, there's two L's. An L, yeah, you're right. I was reading it funny.
Who called her Little Nell?
What are you looking at? Literally right there in her Wikipedia, on the Wikipedia page, is Little Nell.
Little Nell, weird.
That was who the credit was for.
Well, on IMDb, she's Nell Campbell.
Yeah. Train derailed. Underailing. And the fact that Meatloaf comes out, does his big, like, absolutely fantastic, like, rock ballad piece, and then is instantly murdered.
Yeah.
And in front of everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just like, all right, dinner.
Yeah.
And then is fed to them.
It's certainly implied that he is fed to them.
Yes. So you get murdered in front of a lover and then cannibalism, there is a lot more that is just sort of, like, played off because the focus isn't on what's happening, the focus is on who it's happening to.
Yeah.
But, like, where did Rock, like, he's just made in a, like, made how? Rocky's made how? Like,
that's another Frankenstein. There's Frankenstein references in both.
The fact that he just, like, breaks into everybody. Like, the fact that they have surveillance in the bedrooms.
Mm.
The fact that Frankenfurter dresses up like the other two and then just, like, proceeds to have sex with them.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it, like, breaks her brain and she goes off and has sex with Rocky. And that whole, like, Susan Sarandon fantastic song piece. Mm. I think it's just a little bit more, like... It's sort of, like, glamorized. Here's the violence, but song and dance in front of it. You know what I mean? Where...
Give him the old razzle-dazzle.
Yeah, I think with the Phantom of the Paradise, it is very much like, here's some violence, and here's how it expands the story.
I think...
Like a funnel.
I think the difference is... I'm making this up on my as we go along.
Okay.
I think the difference is...
It's 90% of what I do.
In Phantom of the Paradise, that is how the audience sees it, but we're behind the scenes seeing things from Winslow's point of view. Whereas in Rocky Horror Picture Show, we're being dazzled. We're part of, we're with, our point of view is Brad and Janet, who have just walked into this and are like, an affront to their senses, and like, they don't know what's going on. So we're getting the dazzle effect. And then you kind of, it's the, you know, see what's going, the man behind the curtain, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Phantom of Paradise, the whole way along, we are behind the curtain and we're seeing, but you see that, like, you know, when the audience are still cheering for Beef when he's just been electrocuted to death and they're like putting him out with an extinguisher, you know? And even like, spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, when several people die, I don't know if you want me to spoil it that much, the audience just go back to partying. You know, they're still in that razzle dazzle. They're not really caring about or really seeing the violence that's going on. They don't know what's going on behind the curtain. So I think it's very much a perspective. I think we've just shifted. I think, like I said, we're behind the curtain. We're behind the scenes in Phantom of the Paradise. So that dazzling effect is still happening, just not to us. Whereas Rocky Horror Picture Show, we're on the other side of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does.
Yeah. Which also makes sense, I guess, because Rocky Horror started as a stage show.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are the audience. You are, you know, on that side of it. Sorry, I just hit the styrofoam.
It happened. I almost tripped and died on it yesterday.
No.
It's, I don't know. It'd be very interesting to watch these movies again without... It'd be very interesting to watch these movies again if I'd never seen either of them. Does that make a lot of sense?
Yeah.
Because there is part of pop culture that has come along with Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
If you got a group of people dressed up in weird costumes, and they were from Rocky Horror Picture Show, you'd be like, oh, I haven't even seen that movie, but I know who they were.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Phantom of the Opera is also within, like, people...
Paradise.
Phantom of the Opera okay. is very much also in the zeitgeist of pop culture.
100%, yeah.
Where, like, Simpsons do it and, like, you know, so on and so forth.
That's your measurement, is did the Simpsons do it?
Pretty much, because they did everything. to the point where, I guess, I haven't watched it in, like, several years, but from what I hear online, it is not going well for the writing. The whole mask thing, the, like, you know, hiding in the rafters, that whole thing is, like, part and parcel.
Yeah, there's a Discworld novel that's that plot. Yeah. You know, it's everywhere.
It's very interesting to watch it in, like, this weird, like, blend. Because you're right about the costume thing. Like, I had seen the character, the Phantom, before.
Mm-hmm.
I had, because I obviously reaction GIFs, like,
oh, right,
some sort of meme format.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, this weird bird man with the metal teeth and the, you know.
For some reason, dark lips. Yeah. And did he just decide to go goth when he got the metal teeth?
Well, it must have been the fact that he was burnt, so I don't know.
Mm.
It's very, very, very strange.
Yeah.
They make fantastic, like, image of that movie make fantastic gifs. Mm. And this weird, the constantly being viewed thing, which is sort of the most translatable part of both these movies.
Mm.
There's a lot of surveillance stuff going on. I'm too young, because I was born in the 80s, not the 70s. I don't know if that was on everybody's mind at the time.
I mean, 1984 was a
That didn't happen yet.
Well, no, it was written as a future dystopia of the year 1984.
Yeah. Or a current dystopia if you live in certain countries.
Yeah, that's most countries in the world, actually. Yeah, I mean, going back a second, I think it's interesting what you say that, like, you'd love to have watched the two of them without having seen them before. Because that is how a lot of people in the 70s saw them.
Yeah.
Because they did do... So when Rocky Horror came out first, it didn't do well. And then they kind of re-released it. I think it's still played in a couple of places. So technically Rocky Horror Picture Show has never not been in cinemas since it first aired. But they did like a second wide release where they did play them as a double bill. So a lot of people saw these movies for the first time as a double bill in cinema. And then if you want to know the real success of Rocky Horror Picture Show, it was that the distributors realized that it would do well at midnight screenings, which were becoming more popular.
Yeah.
And because they got it into midnight screenings, it never came out of cinema. Because it got so popular in the midnight screenings. But if you look at the original, like, original wide release box office numbers, it's minuscule.
Yeah.
Both movies were flops. But then they, you know, some clever distribution got Rocky Horror into the audiences that needed to see it.
Yeah.
And those are the audiences that kept it alive. And for Phantom of the Paradise, that's Winnipeg, Manitoba. Exclusively.
For some reason, I could just think of... oh my god, now I can't remember his name. The guy who's in Baywatch and Knight Rider.
Hasselhoff.
David Hasselhoff and his, like, singing career in Germany.
Right. It's interesting how things have become, like, very popular in a particular place.
Yeah. There's quite a few of those little weird ones where people are just, like, a certain demographic just completely get obsessed with, like, one individual artist and they're, like...
Yeah.
You know, no one else, they're like, what? That guy still makes music? It's like, yeah, he's, like, number two in this country. And you're like, what?
I mean, that's what the song Big in Japan is about.
Yeah.
You know, because there's artists that weren't making it back home in their English-speaking countries, but were big in Japan.
It's, yeah, it's really weird. I would say I enjoy both of these movies, which, you know, for those who have been long-term listeners, doesn't always happen. I don't know, there's not much more I can think of to say, honestly.
Okay.
I'm assuming because we've done it backwards, there's no more trivia.
Oh, there is so much trivia for both of these movies that, like, it was hard to even pare it down. There's, like, both of these are... Because they're both cult classics, yeah, and they've been around since the 70s, and people actually care enough about them to like, research stuff and put in trivia, you know. As opposed to some movies we watch where, like, there's none, or there's, like, one sentence, and then, like, I'm trying to look up somewhere else and still find nothing. We've talked over a bunch of it, though. In an interview with the New York Times, both members of Daft Punk cite... Phantom of the Paradise as their favorite film of all time and the foundation for a lot of what they're about artistically. So if you're fans of Daft Punk, this is Phantom of the Paradise is where they got their inspiration.
French band.
Yeah, a little underground. Yeah. They claim to have seen it over 20 times each, and they got Paul Williams to appear on their album Random Access Memories because they love Phantom of the Paradise so much.
Bananas to me, but
anyway. Yeah. The single edit time bomb in the car trunk sequence, which is, can I talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic bit of cinematography. I mentioned that while we were watching it even. And it's an homage to the opening of Touch of Evil, which was a very famous Orson Welles single shot opening of a film. And it's very well done that, like, it's we're seeing backstage and in front of the stage split screen the whole time. And then, like, people will cross from one into the other. Like, the camera is following people and things like that, but you never see the cameras. And it was clearly all done, you know, one take. So incredible piece of cinematography and also choreographed actors and camera work for that.
Because that was something I hadn't seen before. I think the movie that pops to mind is Birdman.
Yeah, Birdman does great cinematography.
Because I was like, these must be, like, joined together. There's no way this is, like, filmed simultaneously.
I think in Birdman there are some clever edits.
There are very, very well done clever edits.
But Birdman was definitely a movie that I saw that in cinema, and when I came out of it, I thought, that better win an Oscar for cinematography. You know, and it's not often that you watch a movie and think about the cinematography in it. Yeah. I mean, maybe me a little bit more than other people, you know, with having done, you know, studied film and stuff. But even then, like, there's most of the time I'm not thinking about cinematography watching a movie. So I do like it when there's something that really, you know, grabs you like that. A lot of these... Oh, I didn't even realize. Remember I said that one of the actors, that an actor who was in a movie with another actor said the thing about Lloyd Webber?
Yeah.
It was Nell Campbell. Huh. And the other movie was Shock Treatment.
Oh, yes. Do not watch Shock Treatment, folks.
So they're all connected. Everything's connected. I think I've said all the rest of the trivia for this one, except... that Phantom of the Paradise is also Nicolas Cage's favorite Brian De Palma film. We've seen Snake Eyes, which is a Brian De Palma film starring Nicolas Cage. And I think Phantom of the Paradise was the reason that he wanted to work with Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Because he loved this movie so much. I can picture Nick Cage. I mean, if they did a remake of Phantom of the Paradise and cast Nick Cage as Winslow, like...
They would make my Christmas.
That would be perfect. Like, there's not a more perfect actor to reprise that role. Rocky Horror Picture Show. I feel weird talking about Rocky Horror Picture Show because it does have such a cult following. And like I said, this is the second time I've seen this film. So I don't think there's anything I can say here that people who love the film don't already know.
Yeah.
But I'll go with what I have here. So the film opened... this is all about the re-releasing. So I kind of talked about this. That it was opened in August 1975 in London. And then it opened in September in the United States. It did well in one location in Los Angeles. Mm. And then nowhere else. It was actually withdrawn from eight of its, or from, I think, all eight opening cities. It just says it's eight opening cities, because they were getting too small audiences. So it actually pulled from cinema sooner than they planned to.
Right.
But it was supposed to have a New York City opening on Halloween night, which was canceled. But then around the same time, they re-released it on college campuses and around college campuses as a double bill with Phantom of the Paradise. But it still drew small audiences, and it wasn't until they did the midnight screenings that it really kicked off. So the first midnight showing was on April Fool's Day 1976 in New York City.
Right.
This is, believe it or not, the theatrical movie debut of one Tim Curry, who had never been in a film before this.
What?
Did you not know that?
No, I did not know that.
So Tim Curry, basically Richard O'Brien had to fight to get Tim Curry cast because they wanted to replace him with, like, big name actors.
Yeah.
Like, they ended up taking a lower budget for the film because if the only way they were going to get the higher budget was to not cast Tim Curry because he was an unknown. But Tim Curry played the role on the West End.
Right.
So he originated the role on stage, and he played it and went to Broadway. And they were like, this is the guy. Like, we've got to have him in it.
He played him from 1973 to 1975.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tim Curry, I think, was well known in acting circles as a theatrical actor.
Yeah.
He was doing theater work, but he was not, he had never done film before. So I just thought that was fascinating. that's his first film. And I mean, Tim Curry is like absolute icon. So Tim Curry, Richard O'Brien, Patricia Quinn, and Nell Campbell all reprised the same roles that they played in the original stage production. But only Tim Curry and Richard O'Brien also did it on Broadway.
So it was
the director, Jim Sharman, who turned down an offer from 20th Century Fox for a larger budget and a longer shooting schedule if he would cast. The options were Mick Jagger, David Bowie, Lou Reed, or Cher. And he was like, no, the people who actually developed this deserve to be in the movie. And that's, and that they should be the ones who get to play the roles in film. So he wanted to keep as many of the original cast members as possible. So they took a smaller budget and a shorter filming time. But also it's probably part of why it became so successful as well, in that so many of the actors had done those roles so many times. Like, they were embodying them already, because otherwise they would have had very little time to actually rehearse before filming. So these were actors who understood the style of it, they understood the music, they understood, and they were able to do it no problem. What else is there? One thing that I thought was funny, when Dr. Scott, they put the magnet on and his wheelchair, comes through and then smashes through the wall?
Yes.
The set designers had just forgotten to put a door in the lab set. There was supposed to be a door there.
Oh, right, so that's why he just burst through.
So then they just decided so the set was supposed to have a door for him to come through, but then they decided to just, when they realized they hadn't built it, they decided to just shove him through the wall. So it's very funny, because I think that turned out pretty well. There's so many bits of trivia about this. So they filmed it in a castle in England, and apparently there was a leak, so it was always wet and it was always cold. And they had one warm room that they just filled with space heaters, so the cast members could take turns going in and getting heated up, and then the room caught fire.
Jesus.
one room with heaters and it caught fire. When Frankenfurter is creating Rocky Horror, when he's turning all the colored things, he had to do them in a particular order, but they didn't tell him the order, so they were just shouting colors at him off stage, which is why every now and then Tim Curry just looked really confused, looking for one, because they'd just be going red. He used to find it, which I also thought was funny. This is mostly just things I thought was funny. Apparently Richard O'Brien says, so you know the way there's the weird old clock that has a skeleton inside it?
No, but okay.
You didn't notice it? There's a clock in Frankenfurter's castle that has just a skeleton in it.
I guess it's a real skeleton.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
So the skeleton belonged to the woman who commissioned the clock.
That's dark.
And then apparently they, in 2002, they auctioned off the coffin clock and it sold for £35,000. You'd think it'd be more than that for a woman's real skeleton.
Illegal in New Zealand. I just found out something horrible.
Oh yeah?
It was a 2016 TV movie.
Of Rocky Horror?
Yeah.
So I haven't, like I said, I've only seen the movie twice. But I had seen an amateur community theater stage production of it years ago first. And I think that's actually a lot of fun in having people just, try to do these roles.
This cast list is insane, though.
Oh, is it? Is it, well-known people? Who played Frankenfurter?
Laverne Cox.
Oh, wow! Okay.
Yep. Adam Lambert plays Eddie.
Okay, I can see that. Maybe we should watch this.
Yeah.
Is this going to be, we're going to have to do this again as a remake episode?
I guess so. I guess, yeah, well, I'll stop talking about it, but yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So the person who made it, the directed by, was the guy who did the High School Musicals trilogy.
Okay.
Kenny Ortega. So I think this is gonna we're gonna be talking this movie one of these movies again because
that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Tim Curry is in it.
Oh, nice.
So that's what I was like going through like his list. I was like, wait a second, where the hell? Because what I was doing, I was going through his live action stuff while you were talking.
Yeah.
And I was like, where the hell is it? I forgot it was in a TV thing. And I was like, hang on a second. He was in lots of television. And it's like going through. And it's like,
right.
Hang Rocky on a second. The TV version of Rocky Horror.
That's great. Tim, I genuinely really love Tim Curry. And I don't know if we've talked about that much. One of the bits of trivia that I obviously didn't take down, but I remember reading it, was that he was not treated well by fans after this movie. Like, I think overly sexualized and people, like, following him around and stuff like that. So he said he deliberately got chubby and plain after the movie because he just couldn't put up with the way people were treating him.
Right.
Which is sad that he felt like he needed to do that. And it's sad that people treated him like that. But I guess they were treating him like he was a rock star.
Yeah.
You know, going back to our Phantom of the Paradise, yeah. The way there people would have been are treated.
We had a group of people following around after he was in it.
Oh no, I'm talking about Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
The other bits of trivia I had here were so the director said that while him and Richard O'Brien were working on the screenplay together, what they were going for was a darker version of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I get that.
So they did actually speed up the vocals during Time Warp to make them sound more Munchkin-like as well. So you get the...
Yeah, it is very... Yeah, oh my god, it is.
Oh no, are we going to have to do it again?
No, no.
And then the other thing I had on here was that they didn't tell any of the actors or actresses, except for Tim Curry, Richard O'Brien, and Meatloaf, about having the prop course of Eddie under the dining table.
Yeah.
They didn't tell them they were going to do that. So that was just... So, I mean, Meatloaf had to know about it because he modeled for it.
Yeah.
But then Tim Curry and Richard O'Brien obviously are supposed to not really react to it. Like, to them, that's, like, normal, whatever.
Yeah.
But no one else was expecting them to just reveal the corpse underneath and be like, Tim Curry is great. Can I just say that? I think I already did. What, he's so good though. I feel like I'm trying to think. Have we done other Tim Curry movies? Was it just Ferngully?
I was gonna say, did we just watch Home Alone 2?
Yeah, no, we did Home Alone 1 on the podcast with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but we haven't done Home Alone 2. I do love Tim Curry though. What else could we do that he's in? I'm sure we could compare something to
it's,
Clue.
We've got S and It to do.
Yeah, but that's a TV show, isn't it? It's like a TV
series. Technically, they were miniseries.
Yeah, well, we're not doing miniseries, are
but
we?
But it is technically a remake.
Yeah, but it's a different adaptation. And it's not a remake of another movie. And so I think if we do it, it'll be very far down the line when we're running out of other things.
Fair enough.
But I'm sure there's other things we can do, like Wild Thornberries, the movie.
With what?
Something else where someone talks to animals. I don't know. That's a good movie, by the way. Have you ever watched the Wild Thornberries movie?
No, I don't remember.
It's very good. we can get onto that some other time. I do want to talk budget and box office. Do you have any ideas on the budgets and box offices of these?
It's 70s money. I have no idea.
Okay. Do you want me to give you one and you guess the other?
Sure.
Okay, so which one would you like the budget of?
I'm assuming Rocky Horror Picture Show cost less.
Okay, so which one do you want me to give you the budget of?
The Phantom of the Paradise.
Okay, Phantom of the Paradise budget was $1.3 million.
So I'm going to go with $900,000 for Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Halfway between, $1.1 million for Rocky Horror. So, and then for the initial run, box office, Phantom of the Paradise made $2,245.
Jesus!
Yep. And Rocky Horror made $21,245. So I can understand why
they were flopped. To explode in the morning. Like, genuinely.
Horrible. Oh my God. Yeah, really horrible. Rocky Horror has since made $115 million.
Yeah, I bet. Dollars.
And that's not counting DVD Blu-ray sales, of which it will have made a shit ton. But, Phantom of the Paradise.
Because there would have been no insurance and no tax write-off bullshit like there is now with that whole, like, Batwoman movie that was, like...
Oh, yeah. And then... these were clearly passion projects.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they have found cult audiences, but I think... I do think there was some controversy around Rocky Horror that I don't know the full details of, but I think Susan Sarandon spoke out about it, that I think none of the actors... saw any royalties from VHS, DVD, Blu-ray sales.
Right.
When obviously that's where a lot of the money has come from. But I mean, I guess that's not something they were writing into a contract in 1975. Yeah. Or 74 when they...
Hey, just in case this new technology invented, man.
Yeah, home video was not really a thing. It was also, by the way, because I remember reading this, but I didn't put it down, that the Rocky Horror Picture Show was filmed, I think it was filmed in 6 weeks, and they started filming, like, 1 week before Phantom of the Paradise was released in the cinema, so they were filming at the time that it was released, which I thought was interesting, but I don't think they've changed the film version very much from the stage play version.
I hope you're having a great October.
Mm.
You can make ours better by going to our Discord and joining it and talking with us. Or going to our website, ittakes2.co.nz, and signing up to our newsletter.
Mm. And if you go to the 2nd of November 50th anniversary screenings of Phantom of the Paradise in Winnipeg, Manitoba... join our Discord and tell us about it. So share pictures. I want to know about it. We obviously can't get there because we're in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And we have jobs. we can't pick up and run to Canada for a week or whatever. But we would love to hear about it if anyone does make it to it. I just think it's fantastic that, like, there's literally like a 50-year tradition of showing this one movie. In this one town.
This 50-year tradition that's only happened this one time coming up.
No, they've literally been screening it for 50 years. They're doing a big 50th anniversary, like, thing.
Right, yeah.
But, like, it took off in this one town, like, in the 70s, and they've just... They still love it 50 years later, and I think that's fantastic. Like, that's incredible to me.
Well, I hope you have a spooky rest of the season, and I will catch you next time.
So will I. Goodbye.